episode 2 of what we're calling Barometz. This is going to be a collection of content across the Blockmetz platform, which is uncovering the best and the brightest that are building in the Barrachain ecosystem. You should have by now seen the episode with Smokey. And then we've brought on, which I believe is probably the first project that I've seen that we're actively building or wanting to build in the Barrachain ecosystem. But the Barrachain boys, the Barrachain boys on. And yeah, we're going to just pick apart what these guys have been up to. I love this Twitter presence and this Twitter feed more than basically anyone's on the planet. It cracks me up every time I see you guys tweet. But I want to get to the bottom of what's going on, because it seems like there's been a lot of twists and turns. And quite luckily, I remembered that I do have some Tudor Barons sat in a mythical wallet sat on my old laptop, which I'm very, very happy about now looking back. But fellas, how are we doing?
Good.
Yeah, good.
Thanks for having us
on. GM.
Yeah, anytime. Open invite for you guys. But as you say, there's two on. I'll have to juggle, be a good host and juggle the questions back and forth. But why don't we start with high level what you guys are building. I don't know, MXM, if you want to pick it up, and then maybe kind of get into both of your roles at, both your roles in day-to-day. I know it'll change an awful lot, but like kind of what's keeping you guys busy?
Yeah, sure. So Barrachain actually started as a Solidly fork. So it's kind of like a meme now since we pivoted away from that model, but people keep asking like, what's the Solidly fork on Barrachain? And everybody says Barrachain, just kind of like a meme now. But we started, I think over a year ago, I think I started the Barrachain Twitter account 2 weeks before FTX happened or something like that. Yeah, great timing, Anna. So we spent the last like 1.5 years or something to just build our lower Q community. And project-wise, so we completely pivoted away from the Solidly Velo model. And what we're building now essentially is a still VE33 style, but not a DEX, but it's a VE33 style restaking and liquidity marketplace. So how you can imagine that working is that we're not a DEX anymore, but the protocol integrates any yield-bearing asset. So any yield-bearing asset on Barrachain can be integrated into Barrachain. So how does that work? So for example, if we're integrating a DEX, for example, so a DEX, what would be the yield-bearing asset? It would be the LP token, right? So just to run you through an example, so let's say you LP on Kodiak, right? So Kodiak is like the prime DEX on Barrachain after BEX, right? But BEX is more like for like the big tokens and the Barra token liquidity and all the other stuff is most likely ending up on Kodiak. So we actually partner with Kodiak as well. So how you can see the protocol working is essentially, let's say you LP ETH/USD or something into Kodiak. You would then get an ERC-20 token back. So that could be their concentrated liquidity, AMM, or it could be anything of whatever service they offer, as long as you get like an ERC-20 receipt back, right? You would then not stake it with the Kodiak gauge. You would essentially take that LP and you would stake it into Barrachain. And what that does is that essentially you as the farmer, you will earn the emission token of Barrachain. And the voters in our so-called VE33 protocol, they would be earning like the swap fees or KDK token or, you know, whatever else blue chip token you would have in that model. And who earns what, like this is not final, but this mostly depends on like how we design the plugin. So the way Barrachain interacts with all the other protocols is that we build a plugin. So a plugin is essentially just a smart contract that interacts with our protocol. So the way the plugin is built basically dictates, okay, who stakes what where, like what does Barrachain then do with that liquidity? Does it restake in the gauge? How are the tokens distributed, right? So you can build like a lot of different stuff, and you can not just think of it as DEXs, right? Since it's any yield-bearing token, it could be a game, for example. So for example, if Barrachain had like a yield-bearing token or something, some model like that, we could implement it. We can implement lending. We can implement perp DEXs, which we actually do. Some news coming out about that soon. So any yield-bearing asset, essentially, and just imagine it like as a convex layer on top of you know, these yield-bearing protocols on Barrachain.
Yeah, Mr. Bot, anything to add on to that one?
Yeah, no, it's really a great system. It's built on a solid foundation. And the other thing is that the tokenomics is such that you can also, you can pair any other token with Barrow, and Barrow also can be lent out with zero risk of liquidation because of the tokenomics. It's going to be launched on a bonding curve. So it's going to start with a price of 1-to-1 with the base token. And then it's going to go only up from there. It can never go back down. It can never go below that. So those tokenomics mean that you can lend out to users and they can never be liquidated. What we've done is we have an O token model so that the O token acts as a call option on the underlying Barrow token. So O Barrow, the emissions token, is given out, and then it gives you the right to at any time exercise your call option to buy Barrow at the strike price, which is 1-to-1 with the base token. And that means that you can then, if you stake it, you can borrow against it. And like I said, you can't be liquidated. So it's really, really an elegant design.
And will that option have any expiry at all? So they can just choose to exercise that as and when they feel like it?
No expiry, no.
Okay, so I've seen a lot of all tokens come to market, and I don't think they really thought out their design when it comes to a lot of aspects of it. But yeah, I really, really like this model, and I think Barrachain as a whole is going to be, I think there's probably going to be more exotic assets over there than any other ecosystem. And the fact that you guys will benefit massively from that is just like a perfect kind of product market fit for that ecosystem. What's the kind of thinking around the kind of pivot? Was it, because I've seen there's so many people building in the DEX space over there. Was that kind of a factor? Was it something else? Or like, what was the kind of thought process around that?
So in the beginning, we were pretty much the only DEX, I think, apart from obviously the one that runs in the chain. But like looking at the V3.3 model, mostly the ones that succeeded were the ones that had like some kind of help from the chain. Not to shit on Velodrome or Aerodrome or anything, right? They're great protocols, great team and stuff. But most of them that were not down only, I would say, were the ones that like had like some sort of, you know, incentive model with the chain, or they were chosen, maybe not chosen, but like they were like highlighted basically by the growth team of whatever chain they're on, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, but like most of the other Solidly forks, I think like there was like this hyper season once, and then it kind of like all went down 99% while you're locked for 4 years. Yeah, it's not ideal. And so why did we pivot is essentially, so one of my co-founders, so the Heesh Dev, he used to be on the Spirit Sword team. So he came up with this new protocol design. I think originally it was supposed to be like a bribe marketplace or something like that. And the base protocol was actually already live on Base Chain, but it's under a different name. So we were actually kind of tired of waiting for Barrachain. So we're like, okay, like maybe we should do like a test run, but not on testnet, because these kind of game theory things, you cannot test on any testnet, right? It has to be real money, right? So we deployed this protocol under the name 2PayTech on Base. So we partnered with like quite a few protocols there. We don't really have any like on-chain Ponzinomics, like, you know, proof of liquidity over there, right? So we just use like the simple ETH backing for the bonding curve. So there is no like chain native incentives that flow into the flywheel or anything like that. We solely depend on bribes and fees over there, right? But yeah, the protocol did quite well. I think like up to 2 million TVL, which for Base is pretty good, I'd say. There's not really much going on over there now, but yeah, the base idea is already there, but obviously for Barrowchain, we made a lot of different tweaks. Maybe we can get into that later, but we'll be running like validators, and there will be like a constant flow of essentially proof of liquidity incentives going into that flywheel.
Yeah, it ended up being a really, really good run to work out all the kinks. And it was like running it on hard mode, like he said, because we had no help whatsoever, just completely on our own. So with Barrowchain, we're going to have a lot more of a leg up at the start.
Yeah, how beneficial is having the aspect of proof of liquidity for what you guys are building? Is there any like interesting dynamics that, like as you say, adds to the flywheel that's going on over there? Is there anything that people might not be aware of that is quite interesting that makes it a little bit more unique for your product? Like, just kind of fill me in how you guys are thinking about that.
So there's like different ways to think about it. The flywheel graphic we're working on is pretty huge because it's so massive. but I try to like break it down in just a few sentences. So since we're running a validator together with the Honeyjar, so we will be earning obviously commission from whoever stakes their BGT with us, right? We will be earning like I think it's called bearer captured value, which is essentially MEV on bearer chain. We'll be earning rep bearer and, you know, gas, some other gas rewards, right? So what we're planning to do with that is actually emit some of this to the bearer stakers. So in our model, you essentially stake the token, but only for 7 days. There's no more 4 years lockup where, you know, you're like stuck in the token. And 4 years, I don't know, like, you know, a lot of things. That's like 40 years in crypto. So essentially, like, you lock it for 7 days, and then you can participate in that voting scheme, right, where you can vote on the different protocols, where do emissions go and stuff like that. So we're going to emit some of that to the stakers, the bearer stakers. And we're going to be emitting some of that in form of bribes to different protocol pools. Yeah.
And so how does BGT play into the protocol? And if anyone's coming in cold to this, can you give us a kind of high level of what the kind of BGT design is and how you guys can kind of build off the back of that?
So BGT itself is like soulbound. You can't transfer it, right? You can only redeem it into bearer. It's like a one-way street, right? So since we're running on the bonding curve, we have to have a token that's transferable, obviously, right? So we actually partner with Infrared. So Infrared is building a LST, essentially. So it's called IBGT, which is transferable. And also yield bearing, right? So I think they have a wrapped version later on that, you know, basically auto compounds all these different fees that you can get from IBGT, right? I think it's like similar fees to what you get from a validator. So that is essentially the token, right? So you can see it as user would essentially go to the DEX, to the BEX, right? They would stake some liquidity, they would get BGT back. And they're like, okay, what do I do with this BGT? You can then, you know, use Infrared to convert it to IBGT, which makes it liquid transferable. Then it can go onto Barrowdrome and you can, you know, use it to buy a barrow, or, you know, you can swap around between the tokens. And when once you buy a barrow with that, obviously the IBGT goes into our bonding curve, right? And since that accrues fees as well from Infrared, right, all these fees then again can be passed back into the flywheel, whether that be bribes or, you know, what have you.
Yeah, and for anybody who's coming in really cold to Barrowchain, I would highly recommend you watch the episode with Smokey, because he's really good at explaining all of that. But basically, it's being launched with a tri-token model. So there's three tokens that are the underlying tokens of the protocol. There's Honey, which is their native stablecoin. Bera is the gas token, and BGT acts as the LST, or liquid stake token. So it would be like Lido at ETH, where you're earning on that token, but it's also acting as the staked underlying token of the liquidity of the protocol of the chain. So BGT being soulbound means that you can never transfer it. You can only redeem it, which is like burning it for Bera. But the infrared token gives you a liquid version of that BGT token. So it's extremely convenient for investors. And that's one of the, you know, very useful things that we've partnered with.
So is there any, I know you mentioned Kodiak there. How do you kind of scale what yield bearing assets can be on the platform from the kind of get go? And like, how do you like, because I suppose there probably would be Bera incentives initially. How do you stop like the delicate tipping point of kind of wanting as many LSDs to come to the protocol, but without having to like overly incentivize them with native token, which kind of, as we mentioned before, like there can be quite a delicate balance there.
So at the beginning, it will be obviously, there will be all Bera incentives, right? Because the protocol obviously has inflation, right? But that inflation breaks down pretty quickly. So what we did on Base is we started with 4% of initial supply per week, and then it breaks down 1%. But since on Bera chain, we have all these different incentive and yield sources, we probably don't even need that much inflation. And as for Kodiak, so Kodiak is actually part of the liquidity trifecta, right? I don't know if you heard of that, but Yeet, Barodrome, and Kodiak starting the liquidity trifecta. And they're going to sue me for sure if I'm going to spoil anything or what we're going to do and what people can do in that trifecta. But most people can probably already guess that there's going to be something to do there. And then, yeah, in terms of other projects, I think we pretty much partner with every single project on Bera chain, maybe 90%, and then 10% either I never heard of or they're like all the way in the back of the queue, because remember, we need to build like a plugin for every single project, right? We need to make sure that plugin is secure, right? We obviously don't want, you know, that LP to, you know, go to some hacker or whatever, right? So yeah.
And the exercising of the all token emissions, where is, like, I suppose it can be in a wide variety of tokens. I don't know if you've decided on which tokens you will be taking in to exercise the option, but what will be happening with basically the tokens that people are using to exercise? So like, is it going to treasury? Is it going to protocol on liquidity? Like what's the kind of thought process there?
So since in the bonding curve, actually, it's only one token, which would be IBGT. You need like IBGT to exercise the option. So if you earned one OBERO, you need one IBGT to exercise and then get one Bera out. And if you were to, you know, immediately dump the token, your profit would essentially be the delta between the base token and the Bera token. So like, for example, on Base, let's say the ETH right now is $2,300 and the WIC token is 2,310. So your difference would be essentially the profit you make, right, from exercising the option and then dumping the token would be $10.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I asked Smokey this, and it must be quite a difficult one because there is so many projects going to be over on Bera chain from the very, very early days, from the get-go. How difficult is it to foster this kind of collaborative environment whilst there is also that kind of undercurrent of there are little bits and pieces of competition that will definitely be happening over there? Like, how's the initial interactions with the projects been over there? As I say, you guys have been literally one of, if I think of the early days of Bera chain coming out of kind of stealth and the ideas, you guys were like basically there as early as I can remember. But like, what's the kind of feeling in the camp over there at the minute?
So for us, I think I haven't really felt competition really, probably because we changed the model and there's nobody else who has this model. And the model depends essentially on partnerships, right? Like, for example, we don't compete with Kodiak, right? Because their TVL stays with them. Their fees are still there, right? I mean, we just like essentially like restake and market the liquidity to participants, right? Aside from that, we shitpost a lot, right? So we're in lawsuits with every single project, obviously, right? We're suing everyone. That's what we love to do. Yeah, it's like there's not really much happening in terms of competition, but I guess like for the other protocols like DEXs and stuff, there is tough competition because there's like a new DEX every week, right? Yeah, that's from my point of view. Maybe Bowtie has different thoughts.
When I first got involved with Barodrome, it was around the time just before they launched the Tour de Barons collection on Gumball. And I got in the Discord and I was like, who is this guy MXM who's just berating people all the time? Like, he was so mean to everyone. I thought this is a weird way to run a protocol, but it kind of became our thing. And if you see the Twitter profile, that's kind of just our style, and it really works. And a lot of people have come to love it, as I'm sure you've seen.
Yeah, it resonates with the people who've been following that ecosystem. And what I always say about it to people is it's really impressive when you can not take yourself so seriously but actually deliver. And I think it can be quite confusing from the outside looking in. If you are coming in cold, it's like these guys are having fun along the way, but there's a lot of protocols that I've got to stick up their ass, and they can't execute as well as some of the people that I've seen in this ecosystem, which is quite a weird dynamic, but it's, as I say, it's great.
Yeah, I mean, we're still in crypto, right? I don't get why so many people take themselves so seriously, right? It's, I don't know. To be honest, I don't get it.
What is, so you call the community members the low IQ community. Is this just a culmination of things? Like, MXM, are you sick of kind of repeating yourself? Like, where is this kind of branding came from?
So the low IQ actually came to be when we launched the Tour de Barons NFT thing on Gumball. People literally couldn't find the sell button. So we made it like a thing that like there is no sell button, you can only buy it, it's a subordinate curve. And then people get angry, they like try to like, you know, abuse me, but you know, I have such a thick skin, I simply cannot be abused. So I berated everyone all the time. And then it became like then we made a sticker out of it, right? So we have like a lot of stickers, like Ed, shout out to our sticker guy. So all the memes that kind of like come about in the Discord, we have a sticker for that. So we have like, sorry, low IQ sticker, or next week and next year and all that kind of stuff. And then also when we were still a Velo fork, we actually launched the protocol on Arbitrum testnet for people to play around with the airdrop, right? So the ones that had the NFT, they can see how much they're getting. And the button to claim the airdrop was in the website footer, right? So at the bottom of the page. So then we had inflows of like, I don't know, Bota, how many questions per day? Like maybe like 100, 120 questions. What's a footer? Where's the footer? How do I claim?
What's a footer?
Yeah. So that's how the low IQ came about. So I didn't come up with it. It's essentially just low IQ questions. So.
And then Ed made a sticker that's literally just Leonardo DiCaprio pointing down at the bottom of the website. Say, hey, the footer, it's here. And we use that a lot.
Oh, God. Yeah, you can't fork that style of community. And it's great when everyone buys into it and it just becomes its own, its complete own beast, you know what I mean? So if anyone did come along to try and kind of copy-paste you guys, they're definitely not going to be able to do that aspect of it. So I think people underappreciate that. It's like, you see it with like these dead chains that I've got had a shitload of money thrown at them, and they just try and like churn out copy pastas of every protocol that's built on another chain, and it never really works because you've never really got that strong buy-in from actual users, actually those low IQ users, you know. And it's can't fork it, put it that way.
Yeah, and like you said, that we've been around for so long, that's why we've stuck around the team, is because even though it looks like so, you know, just so chaotic on the outside, I realized they were really, really doing something worthwhile on the back end. So that's why we've stuck around so long, and now, you know, we're ready for mainnet launch.
So will you guys be ready day one?
Yeah, pretty much. So we're not on testnet yet because we're kind of waiting for our partners to be live. Since, you know, we can't do a bonding curve of IBGT if there's no IBGT, right? So should be sometime like this month, maybe end of the month, we should be live on testnet. And We'll see how things go, but yeah, we should be pretty much day one on mainnet if it doesn't break down, right?
will the only way to get Barrow be through providing liquidity, or will there be TGE or?
So the as it stands now, like all Barrow you can only get through providing liquidity, but we very likely will have some liquidity pools on Kodiak later on for all Barrow and probably also Barrow as well.
So just to kind of use the emissions through the OAuth token or just like native Barrow?
Yeah, and so the reason we also want to do LP pools is because that also brings in more fees again for voters, right? So voters can then vote on these Kodiak pools, and you know, the more liquidity is there, the more people trade in and out, the more fees again, right? So
yeah,
it's win-win for everyone.
Yeah. Is there anything that people should be aware of on the NFT side? As you say, sometimes we need to spoon feed the community. Maybe a little bit too much. But...
So there's a docs page that lines out the total percentages of the airdrop, but there's a typo in there that I haven't fixed for 6 months, and I will never fix it. And that basically lines out what you can expect in terms of overall percentage for the legendaries, the rares, and the normal NFTs, right? But we're not really giving out the exact rarity scores for, you know, it's like, let's say, 0 to 4,000 is that, 4,000 to 6,000 is that. We don't give that out, right? So people just, like, yeah, have to guess. But, you know, legendaries, obviously, I think they trade at, like, 4 ETH now, something like that. Because people done the math, right? And then do their own math, like what's the Barodrome FTP at launch? Yeah, the moon math, like, yeah, it's like...
Just pluck numbers from Fanatics, super bias.
It's going to be the new Bitcoin, like flipping is happening. My legendaries were 6,000 ETH, like something like that. Yeah.
I love those threads where it's like, oh, this confirmed Barachain airdrop, this is how much people are getting. It's just like, where are these numbers? Like
yeah, we what? Always call them out too.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got just to? Comment no.
Yeah, and kind of also to answer your earlier question about the bonding curve, because a lot of people really have trouble understanding how it works, that to exercise your O tokens, you need to put IBGT in to exercise your token. So if you have one O barrel, you put in one IBGT, and then you get however much, you know, you get your one barrel, but obviously at some point in time, that's going to be worth more than one IBGT. So that's your profit margin. So when you put those base tokens in, they stay in the bonding curve. And then when you want to, you know, that's how it can never go down below zero, is that you only get out what you put in. So if it were to go to zero, it would just go, you know, you would take out all the underlying base tokens and then it would become equal again. That really supports a lot of the things that you can do after that with the token.
And was this the similar dynamic to the original Gumball Mint? Because I remember actually using Gumball for the first time. That was actually really, really cool. And it's quite interesting that that's happening with ERC 404 stuff that's going on. So that was kind of ahead of its time a little bit, I think.
So Gumball is also a bonding curve, and the base token essentially backs the NFT, right? And you can also stake that token and borrow against it, yeah. So it's a similar model, yeah.
Will the so when you said you could technically, did you say you could lend against that? Or is it
so? Yeah, let's say you have one barrel, right? You will stake it, you get one high barrel back, it's locked 7 days. And then depending on the LTV, it's probably like around 99% or something like that. You can borrow, let's say, 0.99 IBGT against your one high barrel, right? So you're still in the voting Ponzi, right? You earn all these rewards. You can vote on your favorite gauges, what have you, right? You get the validator rewards. And while you do that, you can also borrow against that. And with that IBGT that you borrow back out of the bonding curve, you could decide to loop it, right? So you could then again use that to exercise or use it to buy Barrow, stake more, right? You could loop it, or you could take that IBGT and, or you keep it in your wallet, right? If it's like a wrapped version that auto compounds the rewards, so just go to your wallet, or you stake it with Infrared, and then maybe, you know, there's like some other protocol that uses Infrared and you get an airdrop for staking it. Like, I don't know, it could be anything happening, right? That's the mechanics behind borrowing. What most people did on Base and Toupee is they borrowed, they max borrowed, got liquidated, never paid it back. So we have a nice sticky TVL now, which is never going to go down.
They took their, what they borrowed out, and they went and gambled with it elsewhere, lost it, so they can no longer unlock their tokens.
Maybe that's the ultimate way to actually have sticky liquidity in this space, because people will do that if you give them the option to do it.
Bullish.
We have like 99.7% stake rate of the liquid Barrow supply, right? So that's probably why.
Yeah. Well, I think if you look at like GMX traders' PNL as anything to go by, there might be a little bit of sticky liquidity getting stuck in that system. But as you say, with Toupee kind of getting a kind of live in the hot seat test run on the back, you can kind of see how people will play these games, and even being able to kind of preempt that on Barrowdrome is like absolutely huge, isn't it? So it's like, and then obviously you've got the additional dynamics of what's going on Barrowchain. So I don't know, I just want everything to be live. Like, I want everything to be live yesterday, because I can't wait to get over there and just try everything out and have like 25 different layers to the onion and then forget where my deposits are and shit like that. Because it's going to be so much composability across apps. So is there anything else that you want to leave the listeners with that I might not have covered there? Because I know there's a lot to unpack, but if there's anything that you think people should be aware of, please, the floor is yours.
Yeah, so what our listeners should be aware of is that the footer is at the bottom of the website. So when you come and claim your O-Barrow or voting power airdrop, you go to the bottom. So you use the middle button on the mouse, you scroll down until you can't scroll anymore, and there's a button, and then you can claim it. That's all I have to add to this.
That's going to save us so much time later, believe me.
Yeah, I'm going to clip this up into a shot and make sure everyone sees it. you might get less people asking you where the footer is, but yeah, you should probably put some documentation out just around footers and all that good stuff as well, because it is quite complex, you know.
For sure.
Yeah, we've got stickers for that. Stickers for everything. Ed is a machine.
Well, gents, I can't wait to see it go live. If you want to jump back on at the time, and then we can kind of see how the DGens are playing in the arena and see what the next steps are, please shoot me a message. We'll jump back on and do it. But yeah, really looking forward to seeing it go live, and we'll be supporting all the way. And hopefully I can find where you claim this, Barrow. I know you've said it a few times now, but I can't think for the life of me where you said to go and claim it. But
it's the top of the website.
Just keep randomly clicking buttons until you find it.
All right. Thanks a lot, gents. And thanks everyone for listening. Remember to go to the footer and claim your airdrop. See you next time.